The book of Joshua is a book of battles, a book for soldiers, a book for people who would dare to win God's way. And what applied then applies today. It is the faithful who conquer. Those who follow the strategy win, and those who don't, don't. Vine's Expository Bible. For a book about conquests, Joshua sure skimps on military details. What weapons did Joshua's army use? How many officers did his army have? How many men made up each battalion? Did Joshua have an elite force? If so, what training did he require? The answer to these and other questions? We don't know. We don't know because the emphasis is not on a physical battle, but on a spiritual one. The real conflict wasn't with the Canaanites and the Amorites. It was with Satan and his demons. Canaan was the choicest real estate on earth. It connected Africa with Europe. It accessed the Mediterranean Sea. It was marked by fertile fields and valleys. And most important, the land was God's gift to the people of Israel. Nearly seven centuries earlier, God had told Abram, "To your descendants I will give this land." God set this property apart for his people. And he set his people apart to be a blessing for the world. And God promised Abraham, "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." The Hebrews were the couriers of God's covenant to a galaxy of people. Israel was the parchment on which God's redemption story would be written. The city of Jerusalem, the town of Bethlehem, the sacrifices of the people, the prophecies of the prophets, all on this land. The Redeemer would be born here, walk here, live his life here. He would soak the dirt with his blood and shake this ground with his resurrection. The book of Joshua isn't about claiming real estate for a dislocated nation. It's about preserving a stage for God's redemption plan. Satan's counter-strategy was clear. Contaminate the promised land, preempt the promised child, destroy God's people, destroy God's work. Joshua's battle then was a spiritual one. And so was ours. Ephesians chapter 6. Our fight is not against people on earth, but against the rulers and authorities and the powers of the world's darkness, against the spiritual powers of evil in the heavenly world. And that's why you need to put on God's full armor. Then on the day of evil, you will be able to stand strong. And when you have finished the whole fight, you will still be standing. Stand strong with the belt of truth tied around your waist, with the protection of right living on your chest. On your feet, wear the good news of peace to help you stand strong. And also use the shield of faith, which you can stop all of the burning arrows of the evil one. The idea of an actual devil strikes many people as sort of odd and old-fashioned. The popular trend of the day is to blame problems on genetics or governments or environments. Yet the Bible does present a very real and present foe of our faith. His name is Satan. Others call him Beelzebub or Belial or the obstructor, the tempter, the devil, the accuser, the prince of demons, the ruler of this world, the prince of the power of the air. Whatever name you choose, he is the enemy. And he is real. In my mother's journal of their mission time in Haiti, she writes of their journey into fear. of voodoo, witchcraft, demonic activity. Eric spoke of going into the native villages here in Alaska and just sensing the darkness, the lurking presence of evil. Satan is not some cute cartoon character. He's not an imaginary dark counterpart to the Easter Bunny. He is an invisible yet forceful fallen angel called Lucifer, who desired the high place that only God could occupy, and he rebelled and disobeyed, and he wants you and me to do the same. The devil, your enemy, goes about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he can devour. Any person who has dared to draw near to God has felt Satan's attack. Max Lucado asks, want to read his rap sheet? Satan incited David, 1 Chronicles 21:1. Satan has asked to sift you, Peter, like wheat, Luke 22:31. The devil persuaded Judas Iscariot to turn against Jesus, John 13:2. The woman Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, Luke 13:16. He has blinded the minds of those who don't believe, and as a result, they don't see the light of God's good news, 2 Corinthians 4:4. He rules the world, and his spirit has power over everyone who doesn't obey God, Ephesians 2:2. Satan incites. He sifts. He persuades. He blinds, rules. And he has one objective: to steal, to kill, to destroy. John 10:10. And Satan is ticked off with you. All this talk about glory days living has him in a foul mood, for your wilderness days didn't trouble him. But now you're stepping out into your promised land life and daring to walk in faith, not fear, leaning on grace, not guilt, hearing God's voice more, hearing the devil's less. Consequently, Satan has got you in his sights and you are in enemy territory. Joshua was. For the first time in nearly five centuries, Hebrews were camping in Canaan. This was the moment that they had all been waiting for. How many times they had gazed across the Jordan at the lush land? Some of them, like Joshua and Caleb, they had waited over 40 years. And when God opened the waters of the Jordan, they didn't want to be asked twice. Quote, all told, about 40,000 armed soldiers crossed over before God to the plains of Jericho, ready for battle. Joshua 4:13. They hurried across with a shout and a whoop and a holler. Had God not stopped them, they would have run straight to Jericho. But God did stop them. They weren't quite ready. It's as if he wanted to give them one more word. Max Lucado says, I'm picturing the mom who is sending her child off to school for the first time. The backpack is full, breakfast has been eaten, the bus is waiting, and little Junior is excited to get out the door. But mommy stops him on the porch. She lowers herself to eye level and says to her son, remember what I have taught you. Remember who you are. Remember whose you are. God did this. He brought the invasion to a halt, and by virtue of two commands, he prepared the Hebrews for the promised land. Joshua chapter 4, reading out of the King James. And it came to pass, when all of the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. And you shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you are lodging this night. Vine's Expository Bible. God actually had Israel set up two different memorials, one on the shore and one in the middle of the riverbed, which you read about in verse 9. And what was the point of these memorials? The stones in the riverbed could only be seen by God once the waters began flowing again. The stones were covered. And just as the cross of Jesus is remembered, but no longer seen, it represents God's acceptance of Jesus' death one time for all to set us free. The memorial on the bank was visible. Every eye could see it. And this reminds us of the resurrection of Jesus. The stones under the water remind us that we died with Christ. And the stones on the bank of the river remind us that we are raised with Christ. All of the people, and as they watched and the waters resumed their flow, Joshua stacked the stones. When the 12th rock was set firmly in place in the top spot, he turned to his people and urged, "When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, 'What are these stones?' then you shall let your children know, saying, 'Israel crossed over the Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over.'" During the years that I was an elder at First Presbyterian Church in Raleigh, we raised monies to purchase a historic building that was adjacent to the church. And to commemorate the event, our Scottish minister had us build a traditional cairn, a heap of stones, as a monument to God's faithfulness. And so each family was invited to bring a stone, especially one that had some personal meaning, and to use it to put up a Christian heritage memorial that we mortared out together outside of what became known as Cairn Hall. And likewise, as in Joshua's day, it became a witness to future generations as a symbol of God's provision and protection, that they may know the hand of the Lord. From Glory Days, the secret of survival in enemy territory: remember. Remember what God has done. Record his accomplishments in your memoirs. Capture this crossing in your memory. And before you look forward to Jericho, look backward to Jordan and see what God has accomplished there. Some years back, Max's daughter, Andrea, reminded him of this truth as he was taking her to middle school. She noticed that he was somewhat anxious. "Why are you so quiet, Dad?" I told her that I was worrying about meeting a book deadline. Kids aren't always clued in on their father's profession, so she asked me, "Haven't you written other books?" "Yes." "How many?" At that point, the answer was 15. "Have you ever missed a deadline before?" "No." "So God has helped you 15 times already?" "Yes." "He helped you every time?" I winced. She was sounding like her mother. "If he's helped you 15 different times, don't you think he'll help you this time?" Translation: Dad, stack the stones. Remember. Satan has no recourse on your testimony. Your best weapon against his attacks are a good memory. Don't forget a single blessing. He forgives your sins, every one. He heals your diseases, every one. He redeems you from hell, saves your life. He crowns you with love and mercy, a paradise crown. He wraps you in goodness, beauty eternal. He renews your youth. You're always young in his presence. God makes everything come out right. He puts victim back on their feet. That's quoted from Psalm 103, verses 2 through 6 out of the Message. Create a trophy room in your heart. Every time you experience a victory, place a memory on the shelf. Before you face a challenge, you can take a quick tour of God's accomplishments. Look at all the paychecks that he has provided, all the blessings he has given, all the prayers he has answered. Imitate the shepherd David, who before he faced Goliath, remembered that the Lord helped him kill a lion and a bear. He faced his future by reviewing the past. Don't go to Jericho until you have remembered Jordan. Okay, I'm picturing an impatient soldier saying, the stones are stacked, the moment is memorialized, can we attack now? Not quite. God had one more instruction for the Hebrews before sending him into battle. And a very interesting one. Remember whose you are. Joshua chapter 5, verse 2. At the time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives for yourself and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time. 600 years earlier, God had inaugurated the practice of male circumcision. Circumcision, he told Abraham, shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. 8 days after birth, each male child should be symbolically set apart, his organ of male identity altered. He was not like the pagans who didn't know God. He was a child of the covenant, and he belonged to God. And during the wilderness wanderings, the Hebrews let this practice lapse, and it's not hard to see why. With hearts hardened, the people ignored the instructions. They might have been tempted to ignore them again. The act would leave the man convalescing for weeks. Their wives and children would be unprotected. Enemy nations were watching their every move, and shouldn't they remain at maximum strength so they could fight? Yet God was not concerned with their numbers or their skill or muscles. He wanted them to remember who they were. Specifically, he rolled away the reproach of Egypt, Joshua 5:9. The reproach of Egypt was the humiliation of slavery that had made them subject to insult and disgrace from the other nations. It was time to reclaim their birthright as God's people. Circumcision then was a symbolic separation from the past. The act declared a new identity. You are no longer who you were, you are mine. No longer slaves, but free. No longer in bondage, but liberated. God's message to the Hebrews, remember whose you are. God's message to us, remember whose you are. And in a sense, all believers have been circumcised. And that may be news to you, but quote, when you came to Christ, he set you free from evil desires, not by a bodily operation of circumcision, but by a spiritual operation, the baptism of your souls. Colossians 2:11. Christ cut away the old life. He severed from you the power of sin and death. The old temptations and lusts and longings, he detached you from the power when you gave your heart to Christ. And it cannot be stated too often or too clearly, you are not the person you used to be. When Your former self no longer exists. The old life is disempowered. When Christ died, you died. When Christ was buried, you were buried. When Christ rose from the dead, you rose from the dead. You are a new you. You can put off the old man and put on the new. And who is the new you? I'm glad you asked. You are God's child. John 1:12. Christ's friend. John 15:15. A member of Christ's body. 1 Corinthians 12:22. A saint. Ephesians 1:1. Redeemed and forgiven of all your sins. Colossians 1:14, complete in Christ, lacking nothing. Colossians 2:10, free from condemnation. Romans 8:1 and 2, God's co-worker. 2 Corinthians 6:1, seated with Christ in the heavenly realm. Ephesians 2:6, God's workmanship. Ephesians 2:10, a citizen of heaven. Philippians 3:20, adopted into God's family. Ephesians 1:5, born of God and the evil one cannot touch you. 1 John 5:18, so get acquainted with your new self. Consider yourselves to be dead to the power of sin and alive to God. Romans 6:11, so when the devil draws near, stand against him. What are you doing here? I'm dead to you. Give him no quarter. Don't take his lies. Don't stand for his accusations. Don't cower at his attacks. And when he dredges up your past mistakes, tell him whose you are. He has no recourse to the truth. He knows who you are. He just hopes that you don't and that you'll forget it. So prove to him that you know, that you remember. Tell him, I have been bought with a price. I belong to God. 1 Corinthians 6:20. I have not been given a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. 2 Timothy 1:7. I cannot be separated from the love of God. Romans 8:35. I can find grace and mercy to help in a time of need. Hebrews 4:16. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Philippians 4:13. Promised land people live like this, think like this. They walk with a reverent swagger. They live out of their inheritance and they show the devil the new name on their spiritual passport. They are spiritually circumcised. And I know that name sounds rather awkward and indelicate, but it's a biblical concept. You are a new creation. God's spirit who is in you is greater than the devil who is in this world. 1 John 4:4. So the secret of surviving in enemy territory, remember. Remember what God has done. Remember whose you are. And the Hebrews did what God commanded, and God protected them. Joshua 5, so it was when all of the kings of the Assyrians and who were on the west side of the Jordan, all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan, their hearts melted. And there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. Devotion prompted divine protection. Don't face Satan by facing Satan. Face Satan by facing God. Don't obsess yourself with the devil. No need to master in the hierarchy of hell. No need to disentangle the puzzle of principalities. Just don't give old Scratch the time of day. Glance at the devil. but gaze at Christ. Yes, there is a war out there, but yes, the war is already won. Colossians 2:15, God stripped the spiritual rulers and powers of their authority with the cross. He won the victory. He showed the world that they were powerless. Satan is a fallen angel whose time is short, so don't let him mess with you. Neutralize him. Remember what God has done. Face the future by remembering the past. And remember whose you are. You're not what you used to be. You are God's child. And then, and only then, you'll be ready to face Jericho. Selah.